Broadcasting live from beautiful Sprout Lake, Washington, otherwise known as UFO and Paranormal Central. We've got a great guest tonight, Jason Valenti, and he's one of the local Bigfoot researchers, I guess local to Washington, and he's got quite some amazing stories to share. So before I go too far into this, I want to welcome Jason on the show. Are you with us, Jason?
I am, James. Thanks for having me.
Oh, great. Great. Glad to have you on. It seems like we've had some similar encounters. I've had some pretty strange experiences myself out there, but I didn't put a lot as much energy into it as it seems you have with the Bigfoot site. Now, your site is SasquatchResearch.net for those people that want to go and check out the website. And I guess I was reading your... Do you want to talk about your what got you into this, or what was your...
Oh, sure. I love telling that story. Yeah. I think about it every day. It was pretty much a life-changing event for me. Back in 1996, I happened to be on a business trip with a friend of mine, and believe it or not, this took place in Florida. And we were driving back from Pensacola. We left there at midnight to return home, and we just planned on driving through the night. And when we got to Tallahassee, we stopped and asked directions, and actually messed them up. Took the wrong road, went back west because I was supposed to go southeast and get to US 19 from I-10, and wound up going through what I believe was Apalachicola National Forest. I can't remember which road this happened on, but about 15 minutes into the drive, we came upon something on the side of the road, which at first, my first impression was I thought it was like a giant Irish setter running in circles chasing its tail, until I looked down and noticed that my brights were not on. When I flashed my brights, that's when the motion froze momentarily, and then eyes appeared, like it had been looking down but then looked up, and then it stood up on 2 feet, and that's when I slammed on the brakes, because we were probably within about 50 yards of it, going at about approximately 50 miles an hour. And so as we came to a stop, we came to a complete stop about 10 to 20 feet past it. But what really struck me in the first few moments of seeing this thing erect, stumbling backwards with its hands in front of its face, was that it was a big creature. And it had blonde hair. I mean, according to me, the guy that was sitting next to me thought it was more brown. But it was a light brown, if we had to identify it as a color. A pale skin, and very wide shoulders, very wide hips. And what I noticed is that the hair was swinging back and forth on its chest. And not until did I move up into Washington and told other Bigfoot researchers that it was suggested to me that it was probably, I was seeing pendulous breasts covered with hair. And what really struck me the most was just seeing these hands in my headlights, and I was like, oh my God, those look human. How can this be? This looks like a gorilla something. And during these moments, my file folders in my mind are trying to compare known animals with what the present situation was calling for, and I it's just kind of like one of those things where it's like, wow, what in the world is this? Because I was raised in a very fundamentalist Christian background, and therefore I just didn't have a lot of this paranormal or what would be considered alternative knowledge kind of experience or knowledge whatsoever about any of this stuff, and I was just flat out told growing up that these things didn't exist. And so that just pretty much put a spin on my world immediately. And then when we came to a stop, the guy sitting next to me, and this is how we knew it wasn't somebody in a suit, James, is that this thing from a standing position did the broad jump and twisted 90 degrees to her left and landed in the forest. And as she was landing, a typical human would have to use both of its legs to absorb the weight, you know, from a jump at that distance, and then proceed to start running from a standing position. And Dennis had told me that as she was landing, she was already having her legs in the motion of running, so that when she hit the ground, she was already sprinting through, and this is through a sand pine forest that had palmetto bushes, you know, those little fibrous roots that are in the southeast in throughout Florida and Georgia and South Carolina. Mississippi, I think, has them too. And so it kind of looked like there was telephone poles, you know, because the branches didn't start till about 18 feet off the ground. And Dennis could clearly see her, and Dennis had just gotten out of the Gulf War, and he was in reconnaissance, and I trusted his judgment when he told me. He says, you know, Jason, conservatively, I think this thing was running at about 35 miles an hour at an oblique angle to my truck that we were in. And so that whole experience was just a total shock to me. I basically probably just kind of went into some form of mild shock, because it so profoundly blew away my belief system. I was just like, wait a minute, okay, what are these things? Is evolution true? These are the questions I started to ask myself, because we just knew this wasn't a gag, it wasn't a hoax. This was a real creature. Probably taking time, if you want to ask me some questions about that.
Yeah, there's a couple of things that I had a very similar experience where I ran into a female as well, and she was real distraught, and I think that's the only reason I got as close as I did. But I got 50 feet away from her, and I was staring right at her in a full moonlit night with a full moon and with a lake behind her. It was a little sandy wash.
Oh, wow.
And I got to see her just clear as a bell and see her face and her features. And, you know, she stood up and I saw, you know, I could tell she had breasts and it was a female. And I actually saw kind of a smile. I kind of received this feeling from her, like, thanks, but no thanks. You know, we don't want to have anything to do with you.
All right.
It was kind of, I was on a major vision quest, like a spiritual journey, and I was pumping as much love and energy to her as I could, because she sounded very distraught. I heard her first, and I think that's the only reason why there was any kind of a connection at all. Otherwise, you know, you just don't see these things. They're far too evolved in nature for us to be sneaking up on them.
Yeah, that was one of the questions that I had to ask myself, was why isn't it more publicly known? And not until I started doing the research that I really figure out, like you had just said, they are built for this environment. You know, they move like cats. And if they don't want to be found, you know, just in physical terms, we're not even talking about how we can even get into the interdimensional aspects of what a lot of researchers think that they're capable of doing. But just, you know, anatomically, physically, these things are, they really are impressive. They are a feat of nature. They can move like lightning and quietly, and just on a, you know, physical perspective, if they don't want to be seen, they're very, very good at cloaking themselves just through physical means.
You know, I think if they wanted to be our enemy, that we would be screwed out there in the forest. If they were violent or decided to take us out, we'd probably never see it coming.
Yeah, thank God that they have the temperament that they do. One of the things that, about 2 weeks after my sighting, I think I was broadcasting mind energy out into the universe so strongly as to, I need to know what this thing is. I have to.
Mm-hmm.
And then the universe brought to me the book by Zachariah Sitchin, The 12th Planet, via one of my father's friends from electronic school. And my friend Tom took me in, and I was really emotionally screwed up over this thing. And I could hardly work. I couldn't focus. Very emotional, and had outbursts of tears, you know, because I was like, what does this all mean? You know, what have I been living a lie? Do I believe in the version of Christianity that's very Americanized? And when I started to read The 12th Planet for the first time, a lot of things started to make sense to me. I'd went to Oral Roberts University. I studied to be a minister. I took Greek and Hebrew. And when I started to follow Sitchin's thought processes in his interpretation of the cuneiform tablets, and I don't know if you're, I don't know, are you familiar with Sitchin's work, James?
Yes, very familiar.
Okay. Well, good. Then I think then you'll probably be able to play off some of the things that I'm going to share. One of the most intriguing things about the information that really struck me is that I think it's like right around page 375, there's this whole piece of information that describes that this extraterrestrial race, you know, called the Anunnaki, basically took upright walking primates and they fused their own DNA with it to create humans. And of all the stories I had ever, you know, heard of up to that point when I read his book, that made a lot of sense to me. I was like, huh. You know, as far out as that sounds, you know, for the first time I'm reading some information, and it's kind of interesting that it's written on stone tablets that we have access to, and that there have been very few scholars that have actually kind of, I don't know if you'd say bold or brave enough, but, you know, to really go out there on a limb like Sitchin did and report it as, well, maybe they were telling the truth, because I think most of the scholars that go through Egyptians and the Romans and the Greeks, you know, a lot of things get thrown into the myth pile. That's just mythology. You know, they were just metaphors. And Sitchin basically says, well, what if they were telling the truth? How did they have charts of our solar system 6,000 years ago and describe all the planets and celestial bodies in our solar system with accuracy? You know, can't have that perspective unless you've been there. So
exactly.
I was very fortunate that at 25 years old, when I had had this experience, that I had been handed that book, and so therefore I read the whole Earth Chronicles and became pretty raptured in that information, and then gave myself permission to basically hang up the form of Christianity that I was practicing and became much more open-minded and got very interested in hyperdimensional physics and consciousness, you know, just the most expansive things. And I was reading a little bit about your stuff on your website. I've definitely touched bases on almost all of that stuff because it just blew me wide open having that experience.
And nobody seems to be the same after running into having a close encounter with a UFO or a Bigfoot. It's almost like the same. There's something that happens, and I don't know if it's just forcing us to turn over in our own mind and start reevaluating everything, or if there is some kind of an energy exchange or what it is, but it sure is interesting that people just aren't the same after they have that experience. They start just opening up to everything.
You know, and it's funny you just said that, you know, there seems to be a connection between UFOs and Bigfoot. Well, I think the connection is really fundamental. I think it's simple. Of course, there's obviously modern and contemporary connections between UFOs and Bigfoots. But I mean, bottom line is if what the Sumerian texts are telling us is true, then Earth is a farm. It's been genetically modified, most of the organisms on this planet, to suit the needs of another race of beings. And humans could be the byproduct of that. So there's absolutely a very profound connection between visitors and anything that's upright, walking, and bipedal in hominoid or hominid, however you want to call it. I choose to use the term hominoid. You know, I think the Bigfoot aren't humans, obviously. We're very different than them. But they're very special beings. One of the most interesting aspects that I read in Sitchin's book, and I haven't really heard too many, I don't think I've even heard anybody talk about this as far as other authors or people in this field, is that the Sasquatch are kind of like the guardians of the earth in one sense. And the Anunnaki were telling the Sumerians, you know, in the account of the creation of humans, that we, and this is the Anunnaki speaking, and they said, well, we found it very interesting that this upright walking creature, the Sasquatch or hominoid. I guess back then, at 450,000 years ago, it could have been an Australopithecus or Homo erectus. We don't know which one it was, but it obviously was one of those two flavors. And they commented and said, well, you know, it's pretty interesting that every time we try to catch other animals, that this thing comes out of the woods and messes up the traps and tries to save another species outside of out of its own. And they said that as if it was a bizarre kind of behavior that the Sasquatch would even consider engaging in. And so, you know, I've actually toyed a lot with, well, okay, if we're a hybrid, if humans are a hybrid of, you know, extraterrestrial DNA, like, well, let's just say hypothetically, if it is true, if we are part Anunnaki, and if we do have some of the genetic material of upright walking primates or hominoids in us, then we would have and possess what another author by the name of Neil Freer says, a bicameral mind. We would have the same kind of tendencies. In other words, I think a lot of the compassion and the love that comes from humans could be very similar to, like, a Sasquatch, because I've had many, numerous cases reported to me by different people who have had encounters with Sasquatch that they were very benevolent, that they actually rescued them. You know, like they were broke down up in the middle of way up some road in northern British Columbia, and they would have froze to death because they went off the road, and the Sasquatch picked up their car and put it back on the road. You know, you always hear stuff like that every once in a while.
Yeah.
You know, and these creatures actually seem to be kind of selfless in one regard, that they actually are like the keepers, and that they actually do have love and compassion for other species outside of their own.
Well, I think Chief Seattle said something like, when you take man out of nature, it hardens his heart. And, I mean, these beings are totally aligned in nature. They're, you know, to me, nature is your closest God connection you can get, you know, to be in nature away from all the social consciousness and the other nonsense. But it just seems to me like these beings evolved naturally or through nature. They kept evolving, and they would probably have some pretty incredible abilities, like a lot of the yogis and lamas or monks or a lot of the Native American elders, that, you know, the holy men, they you know, doing bilocation and doing, you know, being able to do some pretty amazing feats and being telepathic and, you know, all of that would seem to, would come by just being alone in nature. That would be a natural evolution.
Right. Yeah, that was a real hard one for me to accept when I first heard it back in 96, like when I first started doing the research on it. But the more and more I started getting into the study of consciousness, and then I learned that basically the human brain, or all brains in any kind of a mammal, definitely acts as a transceiver, and we're always broadcasting radio frequencies. And I just learned recently, this is so interesting, because I've had PhDs pull me aside and said, Jason, you're going to think I'm nuts, but I swear to God, this thing was talking to me in my mind. And how can you discount that? You know, I mean, I keep running into this over and over. There is definitely some kind of telepathic component here that we're dealing with. And the more and more I begin to do research into consciousness and how the human mind functions, I started to learn that, you know, hey, we broadcast RF frequencies that, you know, that are very long in wavelength, and they actually travel very close to the surface of the Earth. And I, you know, I just, and this was so cool to learn this recently, that basically it would be very natural for animals like that to be able to communicate telepathically. And you know, and I'm sure you know this, and you'll probably be able to elaborate on the pineal gland. You know, it's a gland that we are just now starting to discover in the Western science. Of course, the Indians, you know, the Indians back east always knew what the third eye was all about. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we're just now discovering scientifically and being able to quantify and measure some of the micro, or I guess it's actually smaller than micro voltages that are emitting, transceiving from the pineal gland, the third eye, you know. And, yeah, I get reports all the time that just seem to flummox me. It's like, wow, that's a new one. That's, these creatures are much more capable in a sixth sense than what previously thought.
Well, we've got, they did a study here. I think it was the American Academy of Science. Have you ever seen that study? It's a real thick book, and they were very thorough in talking to the different eyewitnesses. You know, and they asked them every question, like, okay, do you do drugs? Are you on medication? Do you wear glasses? What's your vision? And very thorough in the questioning. And, you know, even asked them what their, are they in any kind of emotional, you know, have they gone through a divorce or whatever, you know, they're very, very
right.
thorough, it seemed like, in everything. And then they would start, you know, getting the descriptions of the Bigfoot from these people that had encounters. And each one of them gave very clear, detailed descriptions, which all fit other than hair count, you know, and size. Maybe that, you know, because there were different sightings of different beings.
Right.
But as far as, you know, not really having much of a neck, you know, their head being very close to their shoulders, very wide shoulders, the descriptions
right.
were all very, very clear in the way they moved and everything. But what was interesting is a lot of the descriptions actually had this creature either moving beyond in just phenomenal speed and agility to the point where, I mean, it even just disappeared on them in
yeah.
full view where it could not. And one guy was watching it walking across the field, and he said it just disappeared. And it couldn't have gone anywhere. He was looking right at it, and he scratched his head, and he walked over there, and he walked all around the field, never saw a thing. And,
mm-hmm.
and you know, that's happened quite a bit. And you know, my experience, I'll tell you my experience. This is really bizarre, and I don't talk about it too much because people think you're, you know, gone off the deep end. But
oh, I hear you.
I was with two other women, and they were witnesses, and I can actually, I'm still in touch with them. I could put you in touch with them. They could verify my story. But we were camping in the Snoqualmie Mountains, and I had a big fry pan, and I was just had a fire going, and I was just getting ready to cook something, and just out of the blue, this white ball of light about, I'd say maybe a foot, somewhere around a foot, maybe a little smaller, came zinging out of the forest and was coming right at me. And it, you know, it kind of scared the crap out of me because it was moving fast.
Sure.
And I grabbed the pan and I held it up like to block it because it was just coming right at me. And it went around me. It went around the van we were in. And it went down the trail. It was under some kind of intelligent guidance, you might say.
Sure.
And so after dinner, it was dark. It was pretty dark out, and the two women went to bed, and I was still outside, and this thing started making this moan. And, you know, I could probably do it on the radio. It's pretty strange, but it went... like this, and then it goes just a morbid moan after that over, and I mean it sounded like it was in deep pain, very hurt. And so I heard it twice, the second time, and you know, in my mind I said, you know, that sounds like a Bigfoot. It sounds just like a Bigfoot. And then my, you know, I started thinking more about it. I go, well, you know, that's stupid. If I walk down there, what if it's a bear, you know, or what if it's a you know, a cougar or something, you know?
Right.
And then I heard it again, and you know, I wanted to see this thing so bad, I didn't care. But I walked down this little trail, and it was a full moon, and I could see very clearly, and I could hear exactly where it was. So I kept walking right up to it, and I saw it sitting on a log with some little bushes in front of it. And I walked right around this corner, and there it was. I thought it was a little further away than where I was hearing it, and it turned out it was much closer. But we just sat there and stared at each other for about 5 minutes, and she didn't want to get up, and I didn't want to move any closer, you know. And I put my hands out, and I sent as much love as I could to it.
Sure.
And then, you know, and I kept saying, are you all right? Are you all right? Can I help? And I kept thinking that in my mind and just sending love, you know, without any fear. And then this thing, it kind of sat up a little bit, squatted, you know, stayed crouched, and then it knew I knew it was there. It was just clear as a bell, and it finally just stood up and it walked right in front of me, right across the sandy wash towards the forest, And it turned to me and it nodded its head and kind of gave a smirk smile in a way, you know, like. And I swear I got a very clear message, thanks but no thanks.
Yeah.
And we don't deal with humans. They just don't trust us at all, which we can't blame them. You know, I don't blame them at all.
Well, yeah, I don't blame them at all. So in other words, is the theory or the understanding is that the ball of white life came over to assist it?
You know,
it came through the trail.
Okay. I have there's a lot of different theories we can come up with. One is these things have the ability to travel as a sphere or something and then remanifest.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, through the forest. Because the thing went right down, right where it was. I mean, it followed this little path that I walked down, and it was sitting right there. Now, this is the other weird thing, is when it walked, it didn't make it to the forest, and it vanished. It just disappeared. And, you know, I thought I was losing my mind. I was watching this thing, and it took me a while to even accept what I saw.
Sure.
And even to this day, I still think back, and I almost question myself, did I really see that, or did I make that up? You know, I don't do drugs. You know, I don't.
Right.
We weren't drinking. I mean, I was totally clean. And, you know, I'll never forget that experience. But, you know, I can't really say I didn't see this thing go from a ball of light to a Bigfoot. I didn't see it.
Right.
All I know is that light went flying, and it was looking for, it was moving around fast looking for something.
Mm-hmm.
And it ended up in the same place where this creature was. So I'm just mm-hmm. curious, have you ever heard anything like that about these lights that are associated with Bigfoot, like these orbs or something?
They certainly seem to be connected. I mean, I'm sure you know the statistic. I find it ironic that Washington State has the highest UFO and Bigfoot sightings of anywhere else on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
There's got to be a connection.
Yeah.
And I believe, here's kind of my theory, and I think this is a pretty strong one, that, you know, if the Sumerian texts tell us that, you know, they were used, that, you know, hominoids were used at 450,000 years ago start off, because we know that the Miocene apes go back to 26 million years, so we know that the bipeds have been around for, oh, God, I think even the most recent find that they had found, you know, that predates the Kennewick man, it goes back to like 14 million years ago. We know that there were upright walking bipeds. And
yeah.
So my belief is that their genes, that their DNA is clean, and that mm-hmm. their DNA is precious for purposes that are unique to whatever the needs and wants are for these extraterrestrials. And I believe that they're, you know, that they come here and they single out these the Bigfoot, and I believe that somehow they either put transmitters on them, cloaking devices. I think that there might even be a higher need for them to cloak them than the Sasquatch themselves, because mm-hmm. their DNA is so precious. I don't know if you know the statistic, but what I found absolutely fascinating in the first couple of years of my research is that humans have 46 chromosomes. All primates have 48, and we're pretty much assuming that Sasquatch has probably got to be the same, 48 chromosomes. And the thing that's bizarre is that when you look at human DNA, it just doesn't look like it's naturally a part of the flora and fauna of the Earth. It seems to be from another world. You know,
mm-hmm.
I just... If you strip any human naked and throw them out, you know, well, in your neck of the woods, for instance, most humans would be hard-pressed to survive the night. And that's
mm-hmm.
just, that doesn't sound like we naturally evolved here, like we're probably from some other kind of watery planet.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've, you know, thought this through, and I've crunched the information in my mind, especially in the context of what Sitchin talks about, that more than likely, because if we're a hybrid, typically hybrids have dirty DNA, you
mm-hmm.
know, we're going to have a higher probability of expressing, and we can see it throughout the human gene pool, because we have 4,000 and counting genetic disorders, you know,
mm-hmm.
and most animals in nature don't even have one, because their genes breed true, you know, survival
mm-hmm.
of the fittest. So I'm really strongly leaning towards the idea that the Sasquatch and UFO connection is because their DNA is so valuable because it's clean. Mm-hmm. And it's very strong DNA. And so, yeah, I keep on getting reports, you know, like it's the Blue Mountains in northeastern Oregon. I'm sure you're familiar with that geographical location.
Yeah.
That's where a lot of these reports come from about the Bigfoot UFO connection and portals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I've had yeah, I've had people approach me that, you know, I just knew that these people were not crackers. You know, I knew that they were upstanding, honest citizens, and they were just trembling, you know, at their words.
Mm-hmm.
And they just kept stopping every other sentence. You're going to think I'm nuts. I'm not crazy. I promise you, this really did happen. And them walking through portals, you know. I mean, one guy said that in the Blue Mountains, he walked into this portal, and all of a sudden, well, I mean, he didn't know it was a portal. He called it that as he was describing his experience. But he says, all I know, I was on this trail, I was hunting, and all of a sudden, everything just went black for a second, and then opened right back up like I was in a prehistoric rainforest. And then I saw this hand come out of the corner of my eye that looked like a big gorilla hand. And, you know, and it's like, you know, geez, what do you do with that information? You know, it is,
you know,
just
I've heard those same accounts. There's a lot of hunters in our neck of the woods that there's a lot of Bigfoot activity around our area. And a lot of people here don't want to talk about it because they want people to leave them alone. They don't want, you know, them bothered, basically. So there's almost like a kinship type of thing with some of the people here in the valley. Now the other thing that we had happen here was really interesting. Is I had Kiwoni, Lapisaurus.
Uh-huh.
You know him?
Oh yeah, I visited with Kiwoni.
Yeah, so he came up here for a little while, and I took him up to this place, and I said, okay, this is where they are. If you want to hang out, you know, this is where we used to see him. And so I took him up, and he had some pretty neat experiences while he was up there. And then I went into the Forest Service, and, you know, I said, I'm just going to ask these guys where we should go, just for the heck of it. And this woman pulls me aside, and she goes, we have a sample of hair. And I said, you're kidding. She said, no, we found almost three foot long hair, big chunk of hair that looked like this thing got hit by something. And so we got a piece of that hair and we had it analyzed. Now this is the strange thing. They said a forensic scientist and a fiber specialist both said, what is this? Is this some alien joke or something? That's what they said. Because it was silicon based, perfectly hollow, and he had other minerals in the hair, and they said this is impossible to create, to create a hair fiber 3 foot long, perfectly hollow. This was grown. And
interesting.
And now that is really weird, because you start thinking about that. Okay, is there actually a silicon based Bigfoot as well, that they might have created some android for the big bad dog program? You know, if they're doing some work in an area and they want to keep people out, maybe they, you know, have these little watchdogs out there, you know, or maybe, you know, they say that our next development as we evolve is probably going to be silicon based, not iron based.
Yeah.
You know, as humans. So go ahead.
I was just going to say, it's just fascinating. You know, when you come across information like that, and then compare it to one of the things I got involved with too back in the late 90s was Mutual UFO Network, MUFON, and I saw that you had probably been a guest speaker at some of their events, and then networking with those people, and then looking at the data of the experiencers and people who have had been abducted, and then, you know, seen Bigfoots there with them. I mean, to me, it just adds up that there's, you know, there's some kind of hybridizing. There's some kind of, you know, some kind of thing going on, you know, to either accelerate microevolution or to create a new species to fit the changing world it could be, or to live on another planet. You know, I don't know. It's pretty doggone.
I think it's like the UFO enigma. You know, people, one person says, okay, they're all great, you know, and the other one says they're all back engineered, you know, nuts and bolts. Another person will say, oh, they're all spiritual light beings, you know, and you know, they're all right, because it's all going on. It's
right,
that
exactly.
Whole enigma is happening, and you can't pigeonhole it. And maybe that's the same experience we're having with this Bigfoot phenomenon. Maybe there is just a natural one that evolved here on the Earth, and you know, maybe it has some advanced abilities beyond what we know that evolved naturally for it, you know, because it didn't get sidetracked into the ego and intellect or whatever. And you know, or maybe it's some connection with these super advanced, technologically advanced beings that are creating something that, you know, I don't know. It's great that people like you are doing research out there, and there's a lot of other people doing it, because that's probably the only way we're ever going to get some answers to these questions.
Right. And I really believe that the research is important for this reason. And this is the only reason why I do this, because I would have stayed in Florida, but, you know, I'm convinced that the world needs to know that hominoids are real and that they're still alive. You know, I mean, as you know, I mean, you're a woodsman. You've been out in the woods, and you know that there's so much area and landmass and still forested areas for these things to roam. Even if the whole interdimensional, and even if there was no supernatural Bigfoot, if you will, and these were just upright walking primates that are still alive today, just in terms of geography and forest, there's like 40%. Landmass for these things to roam on all seven continents. And so one of the things that, I mean, my main thrust of my research is for the purpose of this, is to open people's eyes and get them to understand that maybe, you know, if human origins really does tie back into what Sitchin says, the reason that Sasquatch is so important, or, you know, the knowledge of hominoids, is to know the true identity of who we are. You know, and I know, like, and I think that's pretty in line with your spiritual work. I mean, you know, you remember that line in The Matrix when the Oracle tells Neo, you know, to know yourself. You can't know if you're the one unless you know who you are.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't know who you are, you know, and I think a part of knowing who we are is to know where our meat suit comes from, you know, where our, you know, this fleshy kind of thing. And even though we say that, you know, it resonates with light, and, you know, we're just a bunch of vibrations and we're made out of light energy, that's all true. I believe that. But at the same time, you know, maybe there really is a dark side to the existence of humans in this world that does interplay with something like what Sitchin has uncovered through the 12th planet. You know, what if we were hybridized? What if we were genetically modified? You know, it's been said that we only use 10% of our brains. You know, why is that? You know, how come all other mammals that are alive, you have 100% access to their brains? You know, but yet humans don't. It's almost like there's been some kind of modification to who we are. And so my strong sense is that by virtue of knowing this information, it sets you free, because it allows you to go through the process. Because I'll just share with you really fundamentally what happened to me. I mean, once I read the 12th planet, I went through a grieving process. And I'm not saying that I bought everything that Sitchin said, hook, line, and sinker, because I have disagreements with some of the information. You know, each person has to believe what's right for them. But I believe, in terms of knowing how humans got here, I think that we probably got a pretty good idea of how we did get here by just looking at our own DNA and comparing it to any ancient manuscripts that we have that talks about this. And I believe that if we really understood where we come from, and I believe that the knowledge of the Sasquatch will lead us to the Sumerian texts and the whole story of how humans got here, I believe it will give people back their identity, that they will go through a grieving process, that it wasn't the Garden of Eden and we were walking with God through the cool of the evening and picking apples and naming animals. I don't think it happened that way. I think we had a pretty dark genesis, in my opinion. But I believe that once you move through that, you know, once you accept, okay, well, maybe this did happen and this makes a lot of sense, then we can move into, you know, embracing that and then becoming more in touch with our spiritual side. Because I think the number one problem that people experience, quite frankly, is I think the foundation of knowing how we got here and what we're doing here is missing. You know, and we have all these religions to give us an explanation that's not real solid. I mean, we can talk about, you know, energy and quantum mechanics and all that kind of stuff, which is my favorite. I mean, Jesus, I'm a double Aquarius. I can go there all day.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I know that there needs to be a real foundation for people to sink their teeth into, in terms of, well, how did these human bodies get formulated? You know, where did this all come from? Is there some kind of drama that's missing, you know, that we don't know about, that's been covered up? And quite frankly, I think that's the case.
Yeah. All right, now, I think we've got a caller on the line. Let me see. We have a caller?
Yeah.
Hello?
James, Dr. Fred here. How are you doing, man?
Good.
You know, I'm the show before yours.
Uh-huh.
So how are you guys doing? I'm listening to your show, and it's really fascinating. I listen to your shows all the time. I don't know if you listen to mine, but I love your shows.
Oh, I do.
Yeah. Anyhow, I'd like to share something with your guest because he seems very knowledgeable of Bigfoot and Sasquatch. And I'm somewhat knowledgeable, but not like you guys are. But in Arkansas, and I talked about it on my show tonight just briefly, when I moved from Ann Arbor, Michigan down to Arkansas before the government snatched me away for MKUltra, I was like 16 years old. I used to hang out in a place called Joe Brown Holler. And it's a place where Jesse James would come up from down below, states down below, like Louisiana, and hide out. And it was a very strange place, like you described it. It was the entrance to it was on a friend of mine's farm, the Reaper Farm, and it was in those days very, very remote part of Arkansas. And as you walk down this long old logging road, it changed the whole scenario of the landscape. It was like going into the lost world. And there's many caves down there. Anyhow, I made contact with one of these Bigfoot then, a long time ago, but I didn't know what it was. And then later on, after many, many years later, after I'd been through the Air Force, I started visiting down there, and I began to realize this was a Bigfoot. And so one day I made a wish for an Indian arrow. I never had an arrowhead. And this Bigfoot put this thing on a rock, you know, an arrowhead. I never had one before. And then about a year later, I took a girlfriend of mine from Canada named Tracy Dawson down there. And that's the first time I ever saw him because I took her down there, and for some reason, their energies worked. He was about 50 feet away. And knowing this thing for many, many, this was like 20 years later, but I didn't know what it was. Now I knew what it was. I was more educated. He tracked us for like, he would never get too close. And as we walked through this like strange place, down, you know, this is where I was talking to the Sci-Fi Channel wanted me to go down there and film it. I won't take them down there. I won't let anybody. It's a sacred place. But anyway, this thing stalked me for about, I don't know, a couple of miles down there. So then I came out. We came out, and it's a lot of 2-mile-long dirt road. You can't drive down. A car was parked way out. We had to walk about 2 miles. We get out to the edge of the road where the car was parked. There's 50 farmers out there with shotguns, and they wanted to know who was brave enough or stupid enough to go down into this Joe Brown Holler. And then they saw it with me because they remember me from a kid, you know, the Reaper family was there. And I said, why are you guys all here? I mean, I had a rental car from Hertz, so they didn't know whose car it was. And they said that the Bigfoot, evidently about 3 weeks before that, three hunters had gone down there on those little four-wheel things with like a lawnmower motor in them. And had done some hunting, and it really made Bigfoot mad. And so he had come out of his area in Joe Brown Holler and pulled out a whole bunch of fences along the perimeter of different farms and actually killed 13 goats. And that's why they thought that whoever would go into Joe Brown Holler must be totally insane because of what had happened 3 weeks ago. And I just wanted to share that with you guys, you know.
Oh, thanks.
Was that around Falk, Arkansas?
No, Falk is further south. This is about 40 miles. I know about the Falk one, but this one's about 40. This is, you know, where Little Rock is, about 45 miles north of Little Rock. Near Searcy and Batesville, halfway between there is Pleasant Plains, and then from Pleasant Plains back down into Joe Brown Holler. Yeah, it's still remote down there, by the way. So this was another one that's not noted. I know about the Falk one very well, but no, this was my experience. It was a real deal, and it's still there. I mean, I haven't been down there since. I guess I need to go down there at some point, you know. But I just thought I'd share that with you guys. I thought that was really phenomenal, you know.
Right on. Thank you for sharing us.
Yeah. Maybe you should contact him later on and
I don't want to interrupt your show.
Trip.
You know,
well,
but just,
Dr. Fred, I have a contact page if you want to, you know, shoot me a feedback form.
Yeah, what is
submit
it?
That. I'd love to talk to you more about that.
Sure. Go ahead. What is
right.
it? What's your? How do I reach you?
Oh, if you go to SasquatchResearch.net and then click on Contact, I have these little Bigfoot buttons that are in the shape of little Bigfoot prints.
Oh, cool.
And you just click on the Contact page, and there's a fill-out form.
Okay, I will.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to get out of here. You guys are doing such a fascinating show, and I want to interrupt with your intelligence. It's really smart. Thanks for letting me on the show, James.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Bell. Come back again.
You too. Bye.
Oh, there's another one. Another...
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, one of the funniest things about moving up to Bellingham, because as you know, I said in the early part of the show that I had my sighting in Florida, was living in Largo, Florida, which is a suburb of Tampa, and had my sighting in just 15 miles southwest of Tallahassee.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew intuitively that I had to get up to the Pacific Northwest because I knew that the energy would be much more accepting, because I couldn't shut up about this. You know, I just got myself in endless trouble opening up my mouth in front of family and friends down in Florida, and they just looked at me like I was smoking crack. You know, like, you know, just don't even go there right now. So, you know, when I moved up to Bellingham, Washington in 1999, what I was just jaw-dropping day after day, I would just get on the city bus or I was walking around town, and I just start up a conversation with a total stranger, start talking about Bigfoot. And it was funny because 8 out of 10 people reacted the same way. They would look to their left and they would look to their right to make sure there was nobody that they knew that was watching them. And then they would lean in further to me and then say, hey, you know what? Well, I had Uncle Jack back in 1929. You know, it was always some story about some sighting that had happened in the area. And I just knew that I was home. You know, this is my home. Mm-hmm. And I just feel so good living in this area because the synchronicities are unbelievable. It is just awesome, you know, the verification, the corroboration between different eyewitness testimonies. It just keeps on reinforcing that, yep, I'm in the right spot, and this is happening everywhere, and there's all kinds of interesting twists to things.
Do you know that there's a psychologist, I guess, that's been doing a lot of research in our neck of the woods up here, and I guess he had a sighting. I can't remember his name. But there's a group.
Are you talking
of
about Dr. Matthew Johnson?
You know, it might be. I'm not sure. I heard him on the radio once, and I didn't really get his name. But I thought it was interesting. One of the interviews they're doing with the guy that I heard was that they're putting out, you know, apples and, you know, cucumbers or something. I don't know. That's what most people feed them around here. But and they would disappear. And so they hooked up all this elaborate gear, infrared cameras, trip cameras, everything. And they put it on this, all aiming at this little rock or whatever they're putting it on. And they come back and it's gone. They tried everything to catch this thing with the most elaborate gear you can imagine. And every time the fruit was gone. And they didn't get a thing. They didn't get one film, one camera, whatever. And I thought the interesting part was he was given the description of Bigfoot, saying that, you know, this is basically just a dumb ape. You know, it's just a prehistoric leftover dumb ape. And so I couldn't stand it. You know, I had to call in. So I called in and I said, well, if this is such a dumb ape, it seems to have outsmarted you at every turn, you know. And so that doesn't speak too highly for your, you know, for your mental capacity. But
they are, super intelligent.
But you know, with you know, these things, you know, I myself, how would you, you know, you have all this gear other than unplugging the thing, everything, and then going getting the fruit and then coming back, which didn't happen. I mean, the gear was left running, everything was normal. You know, how did this thing, and it couldn't have been a bird landing and grabbing the fruit and taking off, because that would have tripped, you know, the equipment as well.
Sure.
So, you know, we have to ask ourselves, okay, how did this thing pull this off?
Right.
You know, how did it know exactly how to evade all that gear and get the fruit? I mean, that's mind-boggling.
Yep.
You know, so there's
something
going on.
And also, too. Yeah, and also, too, they, you know, here's another point I want to make, is that they have sophisticated night vision. And the funny thing is that when I first got on the Lummi Reservation up here, you know, there's a little Indian reservation just north of Bellingham, a few miles, and I was slowly working my way in to befriend the Indians and find out, you know, what they knew. Because I'll tell you what, they have a wealth of knowledge. You know, most white people just don't listen to them, and they think that they're fibbing and they're making stuff up. And I certainly had a little bit of that going on in my mind when I first approached them, because they said, you know, they just came right out and said, it says, well, you know, their eyes glow red. And I said, mm-hmm. well, you mean like when you shine a light in their eyes, you know, like a cat and a deer and dogs, you know, you get that reflective luminescence. And they said, no, they glow red on their own. I said, what? And, you know, and it made sense because there's all these different place names. You know, when you look mm-hmm. at the old maps where you'll see like Devil's Ridge, Devil Creek, you know, you always see, you know, you see these place names in Washington. I'm sure there's some around your location where devils used somewhere. And mm-hmm. And sure enough, James, I'll tell you, I was out one night and I saw it. And I was like, holy cow, these guys were not lying. And I wound up catching it on film. And I sent a copy to Doug Hychek from White Wolf Entertainment, who's now working on the sequel to the Sasquatch Legend Meets Science. It's going to be due this fall. And Doug and I had a talk on the phone, and he said, oh, you know, here's another synchronicity. He says, yeah, I saw that too. I'm like, of all the people in the Bigfoot community I could have talked to about this, I happened to pick the first person and probably the only person that's had the same experience as me. And what was interesting was...
We have some hunters here that there's some caves. I'm not going to mention where they are, but these hunters were messing, you know, they were hunting and everything, and they found these caves. And they went into these caves just to, walking around them, and all of a sudden they turned around and they saw this Bigfoot with big red glowing eyes.
There you go.
And they didn't even, they had rifles with them and everything, and they didn't even think about grabbing the rifle. They ran out of there so fast, and they were shaking. And so I tried to talk to these guys, and they didn't want to talk about it. They're local people, and they did not even want to talk about it. And all I could get out of them was, you know, it was, this is real, this has happened. I don't want anybody else to know I'm talking about it. Or, you know, they're good Baptist boys, you know, locals here. And they did not want anybody to even know this happened, but it took them up really bad.
Oh, I could see why it would just terrify people. I saw it three times in the month of September of 2004. And when, just to conclude this conversation I had with Doug, he told me that he did research on bioluminescence in mammals. Come to find out, there is none in any known primate. No primate that we know of has bioluminescence in their eyeballs. Mm-hmm. But check this out. Humans average 2 to 5 bioluminescent cells per eyeball.
Hmm.
No known reason why. It's almost as if it's a vestigial. And so, to me, that lends a little bit more credence, possibly, that this whole thing about Sitchin might be true, and that you know, the DNA may have been taken from the Sasquatch to create humans from the Anunnaki, or whoever you want to call these visitors. And so that was just a really interesting tidbit that I had uncovered about 3 years ago in my research. I was like, dang, that is just fascinating. And apparently, you know, I've seen their eyes broadcast. The third time I had seen it, it was so bright. I thought there was flashlights with red filters on them.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently, you know, if you think about the mechanics of this, if they're nocturnal, and we have every reason to believe, because when you look in the fossil record at any of the hominoids, their eye sockets are at least twice the size of ours. And mm-hmm. so you have to accommodate more rods and cones, and so therefore you can see better in the dark. Well, if the white parts of your eyes can have some kind of a bioluminescent chemical, then all you have to do is broadcast a little bit of light in front of you that will light up, you know, a surface area going out maybe 75 feet, and then you have really, really excellent vision in the middle of the night with no starlight, no light. You can see in caves, and apparently, you know, that's what they need to do to make themselves scarce. So
when you see somebody, you know, being out in the woods a lot myself, I walk very softly, and all my spidey senses are out. I feel, and I'm looking around, but most people don't, and it's amazing. I think people are just so noisy in the woods, and they don't belong there. You know, you can tell, and you know, you can hear most humans coming a mile away. Whereas you really have to tap in to feel the other creatures around you, you know, and what's going on. So, and just by that standard alone, you know, we make so much noise, they'd hear us coming a mile away.
Right.
You know, or 10 miles away probably for them, more than likely.
Exactly.
Well, it's been an interesting show.
Yeah, it has.
There's so many things we can touch on. You have to definitely up in our neck of the woods and start
talking. Oh, I'm definitely going to come up and visit you, for sure. I'd love to.
Talk about you.
Hey, do you mind if I give a plug for our upcoming conference?
No, by all means, go ahead.
Oh, excellent. Thank you. I just wanted to share with the listening audience that we're going to be having a 40th anniversary conference. And we wanted to host it in Willow Creek, California, because, as you know, that famous piece of footage from 1967 of the creature on Bluff Creek that was filmed by Roger Patterson and mm-hmm. Bob Gimlin was with him. Roger Patterson passed away in 72, and so October 20th will be, you know, October 20th, 2007, this year is going to be by the day, the 40th anniversary to the day of when that film was taken. And so we're going to be putting on a commemorative conference for Roger Patterson. Hopefully Bob Gimlin will attend. And, you know, anybody who's who in Bigfoot will probably be at this conference. And so I just wanted to share a little bit. And Derek Laurie has been working very hard for, like, the past year to try to find a team and has assembled a team. And I've been asked by him to be a part of that team. So Derek Laurie and myself and Lori J. Bain and Michael Birkinshaw are going to be hosting this conference. I think right now it seems like it's going to be in Arcata, California. We're working on Humboldt State University, hopefully, mm-hmm. having us there. But over the next few weeks, we're going to be firming up the dates and the times and the ticket prices. We have, right now, if you go to the front page of the website, we have confirmed speakers and pending speakers. And so I definitely wanted to let the audience know that this is going to be a very professional symposium, you know, and we're going to have a lot of PhDs there, and it's going to be really exciting. And so I just encourage anybody who's listening, who's interested in this field, to definitely attend that conference. It's going to be a historic event.
I might be in that area myself. I think I'm cruising through during that time period.
Oh, we'd love to have you there.
To go to another conference. Well, we've got to wrap it up. We ran out the clock here. But
okay.
I'll definitely have to have you on again soon. And if there's any amazing updates, you know, if you have any incredible sightings or some other witnesses or whatever, we'll definitely have to get together and bring you on the show again.
Excellent. I would love to.
All right. Well, this is James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio signing off. Have a great evening, and thank you so much for listening. Good night.